A key player in Kansas City's hip-hop community died unexpectedly a little over a week ago. His name was Justin Gillespie, but he was better known as Info Gates. Megastar Tech N9ne mourned the beloved producer on Instagram. He wrote, "I just can't right now. Our family love circle just got a hell of a lot shorter with this loss. Not Info Gates. I know that energy never dies. It transfers. But this is super hard to take." That was just the beginning of a real outpouring of grief and love from within the hip-hop community, as well as questions about who was going to take over his projects, including a beat academy he'd started for local teens. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're going to hear about those projects now. My guest is Kemet Coleman, a.k.a. Kemet the Phantom. He's a musician here in town. Hi, Kemet.
Hi. How's it going?
Oof. Well, I want to start by saying how sorry I am for your loss.
Yeah, thank you.
You said that Info Gates was a teacher not just by profession, but by nature. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, Info just really embodied the idea of sharing knowledge on his sleeve and was not pretentious at all about any different concepts, ideas that he felt were great for the advancement of music in general. And for the local hip-hop scene in Kansas City, he was very supportive of every, you know, MC, every producer that was serious about the craft. And for those who weren't, he was, you know, not shy about uplifting people in whatever way possible. I know, you know, when I was in my younger days with a group called COA, he would embrace us into his home. Sometimes he'd let us crash at his place. He would cook. He would make beats. You know, he would do everything he could to make you feel at home, but also understand your own power.
I wanted you to come in today because it sounds like Justin or Info Gates did some things for Kansas City that not everyone knows about, and the story is really worth sharing. First off, he was a producer for Cess Crew. Can you explain to non-hip-hop people what it means to be a hip-hop producer?
Yeah, so, you know, in the term, in the hip-hop world, a producer can mean a couple different things. In his case, he was an executive producer as well as a beat maker. And, you know, in a lot of cases, the word producer just means beat maker, but, he'd be one that would, you know, take on a whole entire project and say, how do we approach this in a way that gets your message across? That's the executive part. And then the beat making part, he was very, very, advanced in. I think he put in all of his 10,000 hours and became definitely an expert.
I remember Cess Crew from the early days. They've been around for a while, since what, the early 2000s, late 90s maybe even.
Yeah, I would say 90s for sure.
I wonder if you can sort of establish the significance of the group both musically and socially in Kansas City.
Yeah, so Cess Crew is by far one of my favorite rap duos, if not just in Kansas City, but just in history of hip hop. The two rappers are Godamus and Ubiquitous, and Godamus is a Kansas City native. Ubiquitous has been here for at least 20 years. I think he's from Denver, but they basically have a very seamless delivery style in which they intertwine their different vocals in a way that makes it seem like they're just one person. But they still have very distinct styles and personalities. They, when I first got out in the scene, which was about 2007, Cess Crew was the hottest duo in Kansas City, and they started to gain the attention later on from Strange Music, Stalwart, Tech N9ne, and at that point began to, you know, go on tour with them, and eventually got signed with Strange Music, and have really been such a guiding light for the hip hop community ever since.
Justin also did solo projects.
Oh yeah, yeah. Justin's solo projects were amazing as well. One of my favorite ones is Muscle Chessbrook, and I actually have a signed poster that I got from a friend. That he made for that particular release. But, you know, on top of that, he made several collaborative albums as well. And another one of my favorites is one that he made by JL that's called Breaking Bad News. It's available on any streaming service.
So for his job, he was a teacher at Plaza Academy. That's a charter high school for non-traditional learners, mostly kids who have not found a good fit either socially or academically at other schools. And the idea is to teach them in a way that not only allows them to graduate, but also allows them to thrive and succeed.
Yeah.
Justin kept his hip-hop life separate from his teacher life for a long time, but that changed a few years back when he started the Kansas City Beat Academy. I understand he started it just in a closet with one computer. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember when he first started, developing the idea. I remember sending him a text and was, you know, supportive in a way where I was like, hey, if you ever need any help, you know, let me know. I'm very proud of you for doing this. But really, he started almost with nothing.
What was the idea?
Well, the idea was to create a scenario where, you know, children, or not children, but students, at-risk students, were able to, you know, create music and get their minds off of some of the things, the harsh realities of some of their lives. Some of those students have really, really tough scenarios. excuse me. And Info is also, he was a very passionate person when it came to justice and especially social justice and equality and opportunity. And so that, I think he inherited from his family, and his mother is also very heavy in the nonprofit world. But you know, I just think he also probably related to those students because of the fact that his path wasn't traditional.
In what way?
Well, because, you know, in Kansas City, if you tell someone you're a music producer, they're gonna think, when are you moving? You know, so he was one of the people that said, no, forget that. I'm going to do that right here in Kansas City. And eventually he said, I'm going to do that right here in Kansas City and inspire other people to do that.
I went back over old press coverage of the Beat Academy, and the quotes from his students really floored me. One kid told a journalist that she was really shy before the Beat Academy because she wasn't proud of herself, but she eventually warmed up to hip hop and it changed her confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Another kid was quoted as saying he couldn't participate in shows if he didn't have his grades up above a certain point.
Cool.
And it motivated him to do his homework and do well in school because he wanted to be part of it so bad. That is profound stuff.
I agree. And that's one of the most beautiful things I think about Info, is he was such a great steward of hip hop, because those sentiments there are actually what hip hop was founded on, you know, like being this escape and an exciting thing to come to, and a productive thing to do. And I think his ability to keep the spirit of hip hop alive in Kansas City is uncanny.
Can you explain a little bit about what that program, the Beat Academy, grew into? Because it did start as just like a guy with a computer trying to teach students what he could using what he had, into like there's a full studio now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I watched the whole progression happen, and, you know, just from a bare room, you know, with, you know, very limited equipment, with a couple students. It definitely grew. I'm not sure what the total amount of students was, but he eventually built an entire production studio.
And it was like the fifth and sixth hour of school was dedicated to this for some kids.
Yeah, exactly. Which, man, I wish that I had that in high school. You know, I think I would be, I can only imagine, you know, if any of those students take this seriously and want to go on, just like the leg up they have because of the work that Info put into that studio and that program.
I also read that his friends went to the Plaza Academy after this very unexpected news of his death was announced to let the kids know how much they meant to their teacher.
Yes, yes, yes. That is one of the most beautiful things that I've seen the music scene and the hip-hop community do, to embrace his legacy and really give confidence to all of the students that, you know, although Info is no longer with us in the physical, his spirit and legacy lives on through all of us, because we have, as a good rapper friend of mine said at his funeral, they have the full power of the hip hop community at their disposal. And we are going to use this as a catalyst to really give back to the community and give and recognize that our in ourselves that we have something great right here.
In Tech N9ne's remembrance, his grief takes the form of questions about basically what now, especially when it comes to the Beat Academy. What mm-hmm. is going to happen with that, as far as you can tell?
Yeah, well, it definitely won't shutter. You know, I'm going to do everything that I can to help. I think I've seen a good friend of mine, Reggie B, who's an amazing vocalist, producer, engineer, is... he posted something about him being involved. You know, I think everybody that's close to Info and is able to, you know, produce music is going to help out wherever possible. So,
anything else you want to share about your friend Info Gates?
Yeah, I think Info just really had a great ability to inspire Kansas City students to pursue music in Kansas City. And I really think that that shouldn't go away anytime soon, because a lot of people think that a lot of our students in the city think that they have to go elsewhere. And sometimes you do, but you can also create something magical right here in Kansas City. There's so much opportunity. And I think Info will definitely live on as one of the greatest examples of making that happen.
On a happier note, your band, The Fantastics, is about to perform at something called Black Prom tomorrow night in Lawrence. What is that about?
Yeah. Black Prom is put on by iHeart Local Music, and Fally is one of the like just greatest.
Fally Afani.
Yeah. She's one of the greatest concert goers, journalists. So she's putting that on, and it's definitely a commemoration of Black History Month. She had her whole cover page issue featuring a slew of Black band leaders around Lawrence and Kansas City in the area. So we're helping to celebrate that and bring prom back, because we're back in high school.
Black Prom is tomorrow night at the Granada. It's the release party for the spring 2020 issue of iHeart Local Music, shining a light on Black musicians, specifically in honor of Black History Month. Kemet Coleman, thank you for being here, and thank you for remembering Justin Info Gates Gillespie of Cess Crew.
I'm so honored. Thank you.
Up next, we'll get to know one of the bands featured in that magazine I just mentioned. The band is Black Creatures, and they're kind of sci-fi. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. For all the time people have spent playing video games over the last several decades, there aren't all that many pop songs about it, but check this out.
Arcade love, I see you going for the high score. You think they'll see you on the leaderboard. My dear, you never seem to glow before. We're in an arcade love. I keep on pushing till things come to shove. Please let me in, you beg, I'm looking up. Things are looking up, but you shook me up. So I'm fidgeting with the plug.
This is a song by a Kansas City music duo known as Black Creatures. They're one of many bands featured in the spring issue of iHeart Local Music, and one of the musicians is with us now to tell their story, Xavier Martin of the Black Creatures. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having us, Gina.
Thank you for being here. I love this song.
We love it, too. It was really fun working on it earlier this week.
Black Creatures is made up of two people. Whose voice are we hearing now?
Jade is the primary vocalist for the Black Creatures.
And how do you describe your band, your sound?
We describe it most recently as like an alternative R&B dark pop with a sci-fi fusion.
What's your role?
I am a writer, producer, and I do vocals too. I try not to be the primary vocal person because that's just, I don't like to be in the front of things usually, but you got me on the radio today, so.
You have said that you create music that appeals to, and I quote, weird Black people. What do you mean by that?
I think that we, a long time ago especially, said that we wanted to make music for the kind of young people we were, and Jade and I were like noticeably strange kids.
In what way?
I know that, well, so in high school, we both were in anime club. I remember wearing graphic tees that had really bad jokes on them. I think Jade had a green afro. We were those kids, but, you know, we obviously had a good time. We were happy with who we were. It just, we felt like there wasn't music for, you know, people like us. So people who would have appreciated our stuff weren't, like, super common. We didn't know how to find those other people. And so, like, we made music so that people can congregate to that.
Let's play another song. This is Quartz by the Black Creatures.
Low lights, no lights, falling snow light. Quartz points and high beams, faded black jeans and dark clouds in your eyes. My Bambi doe, I might die when dawn comes. Fauna falls asleep till springtime gives us time to warm up. You're enough and I'm enough, like I'm in love with the waltz we do between digital, the lives we live.
What's weird about this song?
Well, how much we got done in just an hour to make it.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. You do this whole, like, crazy one-hour song challenge, and all the songs we're playing today are from that.
Yes. I think that, for me, the weirdest thing about it is it's conceptually interpretive. Whilst also being focused, I know that Jade had a very specific thought in mind when writing it. And at the same time, I think that there is room for interpretation in a way that's beneficial for the listener. And it's interesting to have both of those in a song with so much intention.
You know, this is how I would put it, and you can correct this if you're just like, no. But it sounds very ethereal to me, but a lot of other music that I would describe that way doesn't have much of a beat, which is definitely not true with this. And I feel like the beat keeps it on a track instead of just being like floating out there into Neverland.
Yeah. That's definitely something that I, as a producer, I do intentionally. I really like atmosphere and tone. Something that inspired me a lot to do stuff like that was like movie scores and video game music. You know, when you play a video game, it's not music that has a beat inherently. It's supposed to like feel like it's the space around you. So
it's creating a world.
That. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about your relationship with video games, because this is the second time video games have come up in this short interview.
Video games definitely, for me, helped me kind of understand myself and how I wanted to interact with people, which is really an odd thing to say. One would think that someone would want to interact with people to get a better experience in doing that, a better skill set and toolkit. But somehow, in playing a lot of video games, that was how I've picked up that skill set. And so I guess it gave me a lot of good feelings, and I wanted to emulate those feelings in my music. And so I like to, you know, like I said earlier, create a place for people like that to congregate.
You do a thing where you create songs in an hour. Explain
yeah.
it.
We had an idea to to keep our brains fresh, keep those neurons firing. So we thought, what if we made a new song every 2 weeks, and we did it just in 1 hour to give ourselves a challenge? We created that limit, and it's been super fun. We're on what is that song, Arcade Love, was the sixth one. Sometimes we expect that it won't always be, you know, a hit or anything, but that's not the point. The point is to just put something down and make it.
It seems like that the expectation of, like, this is going to be amazing, it has to be amazing, maybe paralyzes a lot of people, that they want to create something great and won't sit down to do it until they have the idea that they think is going to be great. And it seems like you yeah. found a way to sort of short-circuit that problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that creating a limit, a restriction, or a challenge for an artist is one of the things that keeps a lot of people going. I think that so many options a lot of the time is, like you said, is paralyzes people. So I was like, what if we can just circumvent that entirely and just make something, put it out, people know who we are, and I mean, it'll just be fun, especially for us.
Do you think that's part of the excitement of it too? Just that, I mean, as I was listening, just I think it created, as with you being someone who's into video games, it's interesting to me that, like, there's a game that you've created to make the songs too. And then you bring the listener into that, because the listener is like imagining, how do you do this in an hour?
Yeah, it's we especially like to bring the listener in by, we do a live stream as well. Like accessible to Patreon patrons, but then we also put the video out onto YouTube, the highlights reel. And we feel like the involvement there helps us also, because we're like, okay, we're also being watched.
Held accountable.
Yeah.
And cheered on.
Ultimately. I mean, like, I can't imagine people are watching that going, I hope they fail. There's really no way to fail. If you're making music, you're making music.
If people are doing that, I just want to say I think they're jerks.
I mean, I hope they're having a good time watching at least.
So you also started contributing vocals at a certain point along the way, which you had not planned to do at first. Talk to me about that.
We definitely started a song for our first album, See No Evil, and I feel like I remember Jade saying something about, like, this makes more sense coming from you. Like, because I was writing stuff, but contextually, we kind of made it like Jade's job to vocalize those things, to put those things out in the air for people to hear. But as we kept moving forward and I started writing more and more, Jade was like, I think this sounds better coming from you. And even more so, like, recently, I'll write something and be like, Jade, would you be willing to do this? And they'll say, hey, no, this is your thing. Do it.
Everything that we've played is a 1-hour challenge song, and that includes the one we're playing next with your voice on it.
Oh,
this
gosh.
Is called Shine. So this is Shine by the Black Creatures.
Hey. Hope you don't mind it if I say I'm honored, yeah, by the way you shine and the love you conjured. Yeah, you the sun, I'm the moon.
Yeah,
you give me warmth and it gets me in my mood, so I hope you do not mind it. I rise like the moon in the light,
yeah,
of you. You got me shining,
yeah,
to you, yeah, I'm really vibing, yeah, you. I see the stars at night, but they ain't like you in the day. I'm feeling,
hey,
gifted like I'm Jay-Z to your Beyonce. So I,
yeah,
hope you do not mind it if I say I'm honored by the way you shine and the love you conjured.
Yeah,
you the sun, I'm the moon. You give me warmth and it gets me in my mood, so I hope you do not mind it.
Talk to me about this song.
It was the first time we tried to flip the script on the method that we use to do the 1-hour song challenge. Usually, Jade just starts writing like concepts down and I'm like drafting up sounds. I'm sound designing and stuff on my computer. But we were like, what if Jade just dropped some vocals on the track first and then I write a rap to that? And
so her vocals kind of were your beat in a way.
Yes. Which for me was actually really difficult because I wasn't used to Jade's style of arrangement. I really love it. And so I was like, oh, I'm having a hard time trying to come up with something that like really like uplifts us even more than it's doing itself. So I was really like, the pressure was on me, but, it felt really happy. And so I was like, well, for me, a lot of what feels like happiness is, love. So I went with that.
It's the sentiment in the song is really one of, like, basking in someone else's glow.
Yes.
Which not a lot of like front people and bands are known for doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I get that. I think that Jade and I kind of get to have that feeling exemplified by the fact there's just two of us and we both have to be like supporting each other to make our project work.
It's really also just hearing a female vocalist her voice there, and then a male vocalist saying how much he loves the way someone shines. In my mind, just that dynamic of someone supporting, like the male supporting the female, is just it's refreshing.
I'm glad to hear it. It's definitely not a perspective that I specifically like thought of, but that's really awesome. I'm so glad that that's the interpretation that can be pulled from that.
You're on the cover of this new issue of iHeart Local Music with a bunch of other up-and-coming Black musicians working in our area. What is that like? Does that feel important to you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I feel like I told you about Jade and I's vision of creating a place through music for people to congregate, and I think that this exemplifies that even further for tons of different people. You know, everybody gets to get a piece of something that was meant for them. And I think that's just awesome. It's awesome to be in that space with all those other great artists and to have worked with them already to also be on this issue. props.
Tell me more about some of the other people who are included in the issue and what you think matters about them.
Sauce is in that photo. From New Black City, they call me Sauce. And he's super cool, super down to earth, and is always like giving a lot of artists like an opportunity to do something great. And then on top of that, he goes and teaches hip hop and rap lessons and how to write music to youth. And that's like giving an opportunity for a voice to people who didn't know that they had one. And that's something that I actually hope to be doing at some point in the future. Less is More was there. I think we were standing next to each other in the photo. And he does this interpretive. What is the word when you make something immediately?
Spontaneous?
Yes.
So, impromptu?
Impromptu. When he does performances, it's like he just comes with his instruments, Less is More in the Goats, and it's just everything's impromptu. Everything's made right there. And it's always so intense and engaging, and it's in like literally he engages the audience and asks them to be a part of the show. It's so cool, and I'm glad to have done as many shows as we've done with him.
What can people expect if they go to your next show? It's February 24th at Minibar in Midtown, Kansas City.
People can expect, well, I guess really not a whole lot. Every time people come to our shows, they tell me they did not expect what we provided. But it's always been a blast for them. So expect to be surprised. Expect to be intimately involved is what I like to say.
You're also playing a Leap Day show at that same venue. It's not every year you can say you have a show on February 29th.
I think this is the first time we've actually gotten that opportunity in the 6 years that we've been doing this.
Will that show be about the, there'll be similar shows, those two?
Maybe not. we do a lot of switching around things when we have shows that close to each other. And generally we just switch up our sets just because it's fun for us. We have a lot of stuff to show the world.
Well, Xavier Martin, anything else that you want to tell us about your band or your sound or where you're headed before we have to say goodbye today?
We are super excited to be going to the release event for the issue of iHeart Local Music. And so we're going to be at Black Prom on Saturday, and that's really exciting. And I hope that a lot of people will check out that article.
Xavier Martin of Black Creatures, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Black Creatures is one of the bands featured in the spring 2020 issue of iHeart Local Music. The release party for that issue is tomorrow night at the Granada. They're calling it Black Prom. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for a classic fairy tale that's getting major updates and improvements on KCUR's Central Standard. What big teeth you have, what big eyes you have. These creepy lines from Little Red Riding Hood point to the real weirdness of this story, which is stalkery and just pretty messed up in a whole lot of ways. But it's a classic, so what do? Well, you riff on it till it works. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now we're talking about a new version of Little Red Riding Hood, which is being performed by Mesner Puppet Theater later this month. Let's start with the author of this newfangled prairie tale, Lisa Campbell-Ernst. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
What inspired you to revisit Little Red Riding Hood?
Well, it really turned out to be a surprise that I created this book. I was visiting a school where the students had been given an assignment to retell a fairy tale, and their teacher asked me if I could give them some advice. But the truth of the matter was I had never retold a fairy tale. So in order to come up with the advice, I decided to give myself the assignment. And I brainstormed all the fairy tales I could remember. I chose Little Red Riding Hood because the protagonist is a girl. And that really made me want to tell a story, but with a twist.
Thinking about the old school version of the story, I am actually pretty appalled that generations of parents gleefully read this to their kids. I was one of those kids hearing about what? Wolves eating grandmas and cute children in capes?
Exactly. It's very disturbing. I think that initially the goal was to try to get through the message for children to follow directions and don't go off the path, don't talk to strangers. But it involves so much violence, so much death, and also that poor grandma who's so wimpy and defenseless.
Yeah,
and
just like tossed out of her own bed.
Exactly.
So your version, the updates include a more practical hooded jacket for Little Red Riding Hood and a sturdy bicycle.
Yes, it does. Part of what I wanted to share in this version was putting myself into it. I grew up riding my bike around the neighborhood, so I wanted my Little Red Riding Hood to ride a bike. In the original, she's called Little Red Riding Hood, but she never rides anything, and I couldn't quite figure that out.
Yeah, let's let her ride.
Go for it.
Yeah, and then the wolf in this version wants to eat the muffins that she is delivering to her grandma as opposed to wanting to eat her.
Right, yes.
Which definitely. Is kind of refreshing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
So the change that I especially love is that the wolf can't find Little Red Riding Hood's granny because he's assuming that he's going to find a fragile old lady hobbling along, but she is actually what?
She is a strong farmer. She is a strong woman.
And she's riding the tractor.
Yes, she is.
Talk to me about this change. Talk to me about this update that you were inspired to make.
Well, like I said, I was always disturbed that the grandmother was so frail and defenseless. In my eyes, grandparents look out for their grandkids, and they are not going to let anybody mess around with them. So I wanted this grandmother to be realistic and to say, hey, what are you doing? You're not going to cause problems here.
Why not just write a whole new story? Why revise something, albeit a classic, that was kind of insulting and gross?
Good point there. I am a huge fan of compare and contrast, and I kind of like that kids do grow up hearing the old version of this story, and I feel like by making some twists and turns in the story, it makes them then reconsider what they originally heard and maybe why a change is important.
It's like you've issued a correction.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I want to turn now to a puppeteer who is involved in bringing Lisa's version of Little Red Riding Hood to life on stage with puppets. Mike Horner, Director of Puppetry Arts at Mesner Puppet Theater. Good morning.
Good morning.
What most excited you about this story and its potential from a puppetry perspective?
Well, what I liked about it thematically was that the muffins and the baking of the muffins was a driving force all throughout.
Yes, we have not explained this, but the wolf wants a recipe. He wants a coveted recipe.
Yes.
Which I think we can all relate to.
The muffin recipe that Little Red's mother makes and Little Red is delivering is Grandma's prize-winning muffin recipe. I'm assuming it's a prize-winning at the county fair.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. You know, these must be pretty good muffins. So starting with that as kind of the, you know, since that's kind of the theme throughout these muffins and the recipe, I thought, well, what if the whole show is baking themed? And
can you explain that?
Yes. Yeah, so our puppeteer, who is Annie Kalaherka, who's a wonderful local actress and artist and puppeteer, she is playing a baker. So the whole stage set is this little baking station. Then she comes on and puts on a baker's hat and an apron like she's getting ready to work. And then she takes elements that are hanging on her baking station that are on the shelves and turns them into puppets. So everything that she uses is something from the kitchen, albeit with faces added.
And hoods, presumably.
Yeah, a little hoodie. We sewed a little hoodie just the other day for Little Red Riding Hood. So we wanted the audience to see puppets being made from things that they might find in their own home so that kids might be inspired to say, oh, this spoon and this pair of tongs could be used to act out a story.
And so this is a puppet show where the puppeteer is visible.
The puppeteer is visible, yes. And which is a very modern take on puppetry, where you don't always hide the puppeteer. The trick is to make sure that the audience is still focusing on the puppets. And there's ways you can do that, but, you know, making sure that the puppeteer is focusing on the puppets. The puppeteer, when they're visible, tells the audience, this is what you need to be looking at by her looking at the what the audience should see.
Is the puppeteer truly baking muffins? Because I want to know, do you get to eat muffins?
Oh, no.
If you go to the
show. No, no. We did think about, you know, having muffins baking during the show, so you get that smell. But I don't think we're practically going to be able to do that every day, whip up a batch of muffin batter. But she does make fake muffins on the stage, yes.
And so as a reader of this new Little Red Riding Hood and someone who puts on shows for audiences of children and families regularly in Kansas City, what is it that you think, like, made you able to envision that magic of children connecting with what's going on with these characters?
Well, for one, it's the Lisa's book shows a parent doing something positive with their child, making muffins. They're working together in the kitchen. So there's that. It's something kids can relate to, having a grown-up in their life that they do things with. And then another very kid-centric thing is bike riding. You know, like Lisa said, she rode bikes as a kid, and I grew up on a farm in Nebraska. We rode bikes on the, you know, on the prairie as well. So that's such a kid thing to do, and to also have a task. You know, you're delivering muffins to your grandma on your bike. What a cool thing for a kid to have a job. May not be a paid job, to have some responsibility. That's an awesome thing to empower a kid with. And so we love showing that kind of thing on our stage.
The bike seems to me like it would be tricky, because not only are you having a puppet ride a bike, you're having a puppet that is also a kitchen utensil ride a bike.
And the bike is also made out of stuff from the kitchen. So it's,
wow.
We've had to, you know, we had to, you know, reel back some of our fantasies. You know, we really thought, oh, could we make a little bike out of like one of those egg beaters that you
That's
turn?
That's exactly what I pictured.
That's what I
love it.
Well, don't know if we're quite going to accomplish that, but with puppetry, it's you're always making shortcuts because you're making objects that represent something else. And luckily the audience buys into what you're presenting and accepts that.
What do you think of the wolf in this story?
Well, you know, in Lisa's version, you know, he thinks he's better than these country folk.
Yeah, he thinks he's all that.
He thinks he's all that, and he dresses dapper. And as I was working with Annie and we were talking about his voice, I thought, you know, he's probably from the prairie too. But he wears his fancy suspenders, as Grandma says. And he's got a fancy hat and a bow tie. So I think maybe I imagined him a little bit like, if you remember from the old Lost in Space, Dr. Smith. That was kind of the voice I thought about. That kind of, oh, you know, they can put upon, I'm a little better than all of you kind of character. And I thought about that for this wolf because that actor, Jonathan Harris, he was a kid from the Bronx who didn't like his Bronx accent. So he and his wife kind of lived this lifestyle that they were these more refined people, and he spoke like that, even though that was a total put-on personality. I thought maybe that's a little bit what this wolf is like.
Can I just say, it seems to me that what you have really latched on to is the sense of place in this story, which has been specifically written to take place on the prairie, and that the prairie and its personalities have really excited you.
Well, yeah, Lisa and I were just talking this morning about, because I grew up on the farm in Nebraska, and things we could relate to, like that people on the small town in the prairie know about, you know, the down at the feed store, the grain elevator where the old farmers got together for coffee, and, you know, someone calling a place, the old Wilson place, even though the Wilsons have been dead for 30 years, you know, it's just those little things that are so small town, so country, but many people can relate to because they have that background.
Lisa, tell me about your background, and because you mentioned that you wanted to make, you wanted to put this story on the prairie, and you wanted it to evoke people you knew, characters you knew.
I did, definitely. The traditional version that I grew up reading was always talked about this dense forest that Little Red Riding Hood had to travel through, and that fascinated me. But at the same time, I grew up in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. There were no dense forests there. You know, we had scrubby oak trees on the plains, but it was the sky was big. The landscape was broad, and I feel like that contributes to a totally different feel in terms of storytelling and in terms of place, kind of like Mike said.
What do you think it is about fairy tales that makes us want to put ourselves in them?
Wow, that is a great question. Perhaps because they've been around so long, because they are told both printed stories, but then just the history of storytelling. And they've come through so many different versions, and somehow there's a timelessness to them.
So you've said that the granny character, you wanted her to remind you of real grandparents who would do anything to protect their grandkids, who are not like feeble as the sort of caricature might lead you to believe. And I'd like you to read the classic exchange, you know, the what big ears you have, what big teeth you have, as you have reimagined it in the prairie version, where the grandma is actually riding a tractor.
Okay. Well, first of all, I feel kind of bad because Mike just did such a great wolf voice, and I'm not going to sound that way, so my apologies there. I should also preface this by saying that this wolf has been quite the bully and quite the snob up until then. So he tries to sneak up on the grandmother, and she is riding a tractor, and he climbs up the back of the tractor, and she turns around and grabs his shoulders. She grabs him by his fancy suspenders, I guess, and he says, "What big eyes you have, Grandma?" She says, "All the better to see you skulking around my fields," Grandma answered. My, what big ears you have, Grandma," the wolf croaked. "All the better to hear you coming," Grandma answered. My, what big hands you have, Grandma," the wolf groaned. "All the better to crush you like a bug if need be," said Grandma.
Mike, this must have been so much fun to work with.
Oh, yeah, because it's such a polar opposite of the frail granny, or, you know, the classic exchange from the book is Little Red and the wolf disguised. And it's great to do a new take on something that everybody knows, most everyone knows, and just to turn it on its head and do something fun with it.
Do you have a favorite scene?
Let's see. You know, we do have a couple different cooking scenes where the characters cook. So I kind of like doing that, where you can take a moment, and it's always cool when puppets can take a moment and do a thing.
That's what I always say.
Even if it is a shortcut version, you know. So we have Mom starting to make the muffins, and she cracks some eggs, and she gets down her spoon, puts in some ingredients. Then Little Red comes and wants to help, and so she helps Mom. It's always fun when a puppet can do something, can just take some time and let the audience watch them do something that real people can do.
When I think about being someone who does what you do, that has to be kind of a driving motivation. Like, what can I do with the puppet? Like, what is a new thing I can do with the puppet constantly propelling you forward?
Yeah, it's always, what can the puppet do? What can the puppet do well? Puppets don't do many things well. You can force a puppet to try to do something, but you have to sometimes let the puppet say, okay, you make the puppet, then you say, what can this puppet do? What can it succeed at that the audience will understand?
Can you give me an example of that, where you had to let the puppet tell you what it could do?
Oh, I'm trying to think of a specific one. I mean, it's often with dancing. You know, you can try as much as you liked for a puppet to recreate a very specific dance, and you'll probably fail, and the audience just won't understand what this shaking puppet is doing. So you're like, okay, what's a move that this puppet can do? And say that will tell the audience, okay, this is this puppet's interpretation of that dance, and let that be what it is.
But in this case, okay, so Little Red Riding Hood in the new version has to ride a bike.
Yes.
She has to, and she has to be a cooking utensil.
Yes.
Wow.
Am I led to believe that you're still working on solving this problem?
We're still working on the bike part of it.
It's a pretty big part.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge part.
Sorry, Mike. That's, yeah. Sorry, I realized I chose
a book with a... two major vehicles, a bike and a tractor.
Oh yeah.
So the bike, I think, is the harder thing. But so we're still working on that. But we've got Little Red finished as the cooking utensil. Still working.
Oh, so
on
she's
the bike
gonna finger. Hop on the bike.
Oh yes, she does.
She's not gonna be on the bike all the time.
No.
That's
no.
helpful.
Yeah, we talked about having a separate Little Red that's always on the bike, but we're gonna stick with the one Little Red.
So but. If people have suggestions for how a cooking utensil could become both a puppet and a bicycle, maybe they should let you know?
Yes. If they have a wonderful cooking utensil at home that they see as a bicycle, reach out and we'll see if it's something that
could work. Now I'm going to run home to my kitchen and start experimenting.
Lisa, as someone, you started this whole project with taking on an assignment given to school kids.
Yes.
To reimagine a fairy tale, to rewrite a fairy tale. And this is just, I'm guessing, is this the only one you attempted?
No, I had so much fun with this that later I wrote a book called Goldilocks Returns, where as an adult, she feels guilty about what happened to the bears that she did. And she returns.
Wait, what did happen to the bears? All I really remember is that she experimented with like the temperature of porridge, the size of beds.
She ate their porridge. She broke baby bear's chair and she slept in their bed. So she returns as an adult to supposedly fix all of her damage. She really just...
She wants to make amends.
She traumatizes the bears all over again is what happens. And then I also wrote a book called The Gingerbread Girl, which is... based on the gingerbread boy, but it's the gingerbread boy's younger, wiser sister.
I have outside knowledge about you that I accidentally stumbled upon at the library last night. I met your daughter, who is a children's librarian.
She is.
And she saw my name and said, you're interviewing my mom tomorrow. But it occurs to me...
It's a small world, isn't it?
...that you are a family of people who are really deeply invested in children's literature. And I wonder if you can talk to me about that. What's that about?
Again, I think it's just the power of story. Stories, whether they're being acted out by puppets or if it's theater or if it's in a book, they connect us all. And I think that that power is magic when all the elements come together. And definitely when I grew up, my parents not only thought reading was important, but they thought it was fun. And they communicated that to us as their children. And I think that we've tried to pass that on to our kids to say, wow, this is amazing. This is incredible.
What was your favorite book to read to your own kids?
Oh, wow, there were so many of them. I think some of the classic fairy tales were good, and anything that made us laugh.
Lisa Campbell-Ernst, Mike Horner, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gina.
Little Red Riding Hood, a newfangled prairie tale, opens on February 19th at Mesner Studio and runs through March 8th.
That's a wrap for today on KCUR's Central Standard. You can catch this show or any others from the week at kcur.org/centralstandard, but give us till the end of the day for this morning's conversations to show up there. kcur.org/centralstandard. And while you're there, definitely check out the history of football and what Kansas City has to do with it in the archives, because that one really surprised me. And I think there's a lot to enjoy there, even as the Super Bowl parade is over. Talk to us on Twitter anytime, especially if you go to any of the events we talked about this morning. We would love to see your pictures. We are at KCURCST. We'll be back next week with some really good stuff. And just a heads up, we'll be giving The Good Place our screen time treatment a couple weeks from now, so get caught up if you need to. That's your warning. Central Standard is produced by Melody Rowell, Mackenzie Martin, and Noah Taborda. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.